This is Dave Evans with HearThis.com on behalf of the ProstateNet. We're talking today with Dr. Bernard Branson, the Associate Director for Laboratory Diagnostics with the Division of HIV and AIDS Prevention at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We're talking this morning about HIV screening, and what people can do. Good morning, Dr. Branson.
Good morning.
I'd like to begin today's interview with a question regarding the importance of HIV screening. The Centers for Disease Control have recently emphasized the importance of HIV screening for people between the ages of 13 and 64. Please give us some of the rationale behind this.
CDC identified that there were many people who were going through the healthcare system who turned out to be infected with HIV, but they never got tested until they became sick. This ended up being too late for them to benefit from the advances in treatment that can really make a huge difference in terms of the life expectancy as well as the quality of life for people. And so on the basis of those recommendations and a call from many practitioners in healthcare, we convened a group of people to look at developing recommendations for HIV screening, and it seemed that this age group, 13 to 64, was where the bulk of HIV was occurring that remained undetected. We estimate that about a quarter of the 1 to 1.2 million people in the U.S. infected with HIV don't know that they're infected.
It sounds to me then like screening ought to be part of routine health care, similar to the way men are encouraged to establish a baseline for prostate health maintenance. And, you know, women obviously have very active and ongoing programs with regard to breast cancer, both of which have now dramatically increased the number of survivors in those types of cancer. Is this also the case then for HIV?
Yes, that's a very good analogy. The issue is that HIV, like prostate cancer or breast cancer, can be present without giving any early signs or symptoms. And unless you do screen for it, it'll end up going undetected for a period of time when you could have really had some very beneficial impact by treating it.
In looking at HIV, what is the incubation time from infection until the onset of AIDS?
Well, the average incubation from the time that a person first becomes infected until they develop the symptoms for AIDS is about 10 years. Now, this can vary somewhat in different individuals, but that is the average that where a person will remain asymptomatic and unaware that they have HIV for 10 years.
So this really is an issue of a long infection time leading to the realization that, hey, if I had done something about this earlier, if I had realized that I had this condition earlier, I probably could have done something about it.
Exactly. There are a couple of things. Of course, one is that people are infectious during that time period, and increasing data show that once a person knows they're infected with HIV, they are much less likely to transmit it to someone else, so that a person who's unaware they're infected is 3.5 more times more likely to transmit HIV than a person who's aware of it. But in addition, people do need to be monitored, and when they begin to show some signs of damage to their immune system, they should initiate treatment, and initiating treatment early helps keep the disease at bay for a much longer period of time.
Dr. Branson, what are the symptoms that give early indication of HIV infection?
Well, when a person first becomes infected with HIV, when they initially contract it, they can sometimes develop flu-like symptoms. It's called acute HIV infection, and perhaps half of people, when they first become infected, develop those symptoms. Now, because they're indistinguishable from something like influenza or from infectious mono, it very often will go undiagnosed. Then, during the very long latent period, there are virtually no symptoms that might be attributable, although some people develop swollen lymph glands, or they may develop certain oral lesions. There's something called hairy leukoplakia, which looks like a furry, rough thing on the side of the tongue that might give an early indication of HIV. Other than that, it's not until late in the course of the disease, when the immune system is damaged, that people start to actually show signs like weight loss or persistent cough or perhaps fungal infections of the mouth, things like that. But that's really not an early indication. That's a late sign of HIV infection.
So this really does underscore the importance of effective, regular HIV screening for everyone, regardless of whether you think you have HIV or not.
What we're recommending is that everyone should be screened once based on the occurrence of HIV. And then for people who have potential continuing exposures, like multiple sex partners, or obviously people who would inject drugs, they ought to be screened more often. For people with high risk, they ought to be screened at least once a year.
There are several different types of screening tests available to detect HIV. What are the differences among them, and are there any risks or side effects associated with them?
Well, the conventional tests for HIV are it's called an enzyme immunoassay, or an EIA, where you draw blood and you send it off to a laboratory, and it's done with automated processing. The FDA has approved 6 rapid HIV tests since 2002. These are all screening tests that can provide results in less than 30 minutes, and of those, 4 of them can be done on either whole blood specimens, like from a finger stick, one of them from an oral fluid specimen, so they would be very suitable for use in a place like a doctor's office or what's called point-of-care testing, where it doesn't have to be sent off to a laboratory. Both conventional EIA tests and the rapid tests are very highly accurate. However, like all screening procedures, if you get a positive screening test result, it does need to be confirmed with a more specific test. And there are 3 more specific confirmatory tests. One is called the Western blot, one is called the immunofluorescence assay, and the most recent one is testing for the virus RNA itself. And so all of those would have to follow a positive screening test in order to confirm that HIV infection was really present. In terms of side effects or risks associated with any of them, these are all simple blood tests, and basically it just involves, like I said, either a finger stick or drawing blood from the arm. And so, except for the possibility of a little bruise at the site of the blood drawing, there really aren't any risks or side effects associated with the tests.
Dr. Branson, is the diagnosis of HIV necessarily a death sentence? How long can people live with HIV? Does it always turn into AIDS? How long can you live with HIV and AIDS?
I think that question is really the central question that underlies the screening recommendations. If HIV goes undetected until there's been very severe immune damage, you can benefit from some of the medications, and certainly you can extend life with the medications, but they're not nearly as effective as when they're administered before there's been severe damage to the immune system. So at the current time, there isn't a cure for HIV, but there's effective treatment, sort of in the way, let's say, looking at diabetes or even hypertension, where you need to continue to take the therapy in order to hold the disease in check. People basically live as long as 20 years after being infected with HIV, and 20 years and counting, I should say, as continued medications are developed and become available in order to help extend people's lives. The medications in general delay the onset of AIDS. You know, AIDS is marked by severe damage to the immune system, and AIDS itself means that a person is susceptible to a variety of different kinds of infections. The treatment basically preserves the immune function and prevents the severe damage so that people don't come down with the symptoms of AIDS. In general, once a person has developed AIDS, it's a much more severe form of the disease. There's a lot more immune damage, and so life expectancy after the development of AIDS may be only 3 to 5 years, although again, the institution of treatment can prolong that for very many people.
If a person is diagnosed with HIV, what guidance should they expect from their doctor?
Well, the first thing the doctor has to do is some blood tests to look at exactly what stage the disease is at. And there's a test that measures the level of the virus called a viral load test. And there's another one that measures a specific kind of immune system marker called CD4 cell count. And those are the 2 things that would be done first in order to establish exactly how far along the disease is. Subsequent to that, doctors should continue monitoring a person, and if the monitoring test shows that the HIV infection is becoming more active, then it would be time to institute therapy. And so I think that the key ingredient is to get early diagnosis and to get periodic periodic monitoring in order to keep track of exactly where the disease is and when treatment needs to be started. Once treatment is started, it also requires periodic monitoring because the virus can develop resistance. Most people go on a combination of medications, at least three different medications, in order to hold the disease in check. And there are periodic tests done to show to make sure that the virus ends up being suppressed and that there's not a need to a switch in the medications. There are more than 21 medications currently available for treating HIV disease, and using these in combination is the best way to keep the disease under control.
So in summary, this really is a matter of regular screening. It's a matter of recognizing the importance of screening, and particularly of identifying HIV early so that effective treatment can begin.
I don't think there's any question about that, that screening and early diagnosis can really be life-saving for people who have HIV. And we're talking about a simple blood test here that can just be added to the list of routine tests that a person gets in, you know, any healthcare setting when they go in for a checkup. And it seems to make sense to do something that easy in order to prevent a possible severe unsuspected outcome from not knowing one has HIV. And it's not only good for their own health, obviously, but it's good for the health of their loved ones in order to help prevent unsuspected transmission. When a person has HIV and doesn't know it, they can pass it on to people that they care about through sexual activity, and that's something we definitely want to avoid.
Where can someone go to get information on HIV or to find a location to get a screening test?
There are a couple of places that people can go to get information. Information in general for HIV is available from CDC's website. That would be www.cdc.gov/HIV to get specific HIV and AIDS information. To find out where to get a test, obviously you can check with your healthcare provider. There are also two sources of referral for HIV testing sites around the country. One is based on the web at hivtest.org, and you can also call 1-800-CDC-INFO in order to get referral information about testing as well as information over the telephone about HIV disease and AIDS.
Dr. Branson, before we conclude, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I think we've really covered it all. CDC seeks to make HIV testing a standard part of medical care as being a major step forward to making sure people have information, to reducing the stigma associated with HIV, and to get rid of the concept that only high-risk people need to have an HIV test. I think this is like any other preventive health care action that people would take, and I'm very glad that prostate.net has taken interest in promoting this information. Unfortunately, we continue to find providers who diagnose older people with HIV infection very late in the course of their disease because no one suspected it or thought of the need for a routine HIV test, and so that's really what we're promoting at this point in time.
This is Dave Evans with HearThis.com on behalf of ProstateNet. I'd like to thank Dr. Bernard Branson, the Associate Director for Laboratory Diagnostics with the Division of HIV and AIDS Prevention with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. For more information about HIV and AIDS, please visit the CDC website, http://www.cdc.gov/HIV.